It looks like TikTok has a deal with Oracle, but there are still big questions in a transaction right in the middle of disputes between Washington and Beijing.
So the ball's now in the White House's court and also the CFIUS, the regulator that looks at deals.
Our tech reporter will look at what still needs to be sorted through and why many of the biggest airlines are expanding routes despite the uncertainty of the pandemic. Plus, mental health struggles increase during these challenging times. We'll talk about how to handle that in the workplace. It's Monday, September 14th. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal, and this is What's News. We're reporting that Oracle has won the bidding for the U.S. operations of the video sharing app TikTok, beating out Microsoft. The deal is happening against the backdrop of a tense U.S.-China relationship, and key details aren't yet clear. It's likely to be set up as a kind of partnership rather than an outright sale because of Chinese restrictions. WSJ tech reporter Georgia Wells explains what this could mean.
This brings a huge client to Oracle. I mean, not only as a partner, but also as a customer for their cloud division. And so that could be really big for Oracle's business. This thrusts Oracle into like a consumer business type operation that's somewhat new for them. And so that'll be really interesting to see kind of how that works out. I see that as much more of a question mark, though, rather than like an obvious synergy type area.
We also talked to Georgia about TikTok's ability to operate in the U.S. going forward.
So the ball's now in the White House's court and also the CFIUS, the regulator that looks at deals. And so the White House and CFIUS have said that they had concerns about the data for the American users of TikTok. And so now presumably they need to look at how a deal would be structured to see if it answers their questions about the data. But certainly at this point, ball's in their court.
The search is on for a gunman who officials say shot two deputies in Los Angeles in an ambush Saturday night. Here's Sheriff Alex Villanueva.
One is a 31-year-old mother of a 6-year-old boy. Her husband is here with them. The other one is a 24-year-old. And parents are here. Girlfriend is here. They're both out of class 437, so they just graduated. And in fact, I swore them into office just 14 months ago. These are real people doing a tough job.
The deputies have both required surgery. There is a $100,000 reward for information. The Gulf Coast is watching Tropical Storm Sally, which is expected to grow into a hurricane. Landfall could come late tonight. Close to 100 wildfires burned across the western United States over the weekend. Dozens of people have died. Resources from out of state are helping in the effort. This includes firefighters from as far as New Jersey, there to help relieve exhausted workers. The Journal's Jennifer Kalfas is on the story.
Firefighters working out on these lines are working for days at a time, barely get any rest. So part of that help in bringing in these additional fire crews means that firefighters can take 24 hours off, rest, recover, hydrate.
Now to Israel, where the government is imposing a second nationwide lockdown to fight COVID-19. That's a move that hasn't happened in Europe, even in countries where cases are rising again. It's time to avoid the mass gatherings typical during upcoming Jewish holidays. A lot of deal news to look at this morning. Drug maker Gilead will buy biotech company Immunomedics for $21 billion. It makes a major breast cancer drug. And SoftBank has a deal to sell semiconductor company Arm Holdings to NVIDIA. The $40 billion sale could reshape the landscape for the companies that make the chips inside our devices. We could be seeing even more jolts in the market as options trading increases. It's not just big-time traders. New technology makes it easier for smaller investors to get involved. Markets editor Quinton Webb explains how this growth in complicated option trading is affecting the entire market.
In a way, it tends to exacerbate the volatility in markets. So it tends to have a kind of vicious or virtuous circle effect, if you like. So options help push the market higher. It helps kind of amplify swings one way or the other in the market. Now, given that we're kind of heading into election season, given that there's already this other kind of extraordinary volatility in markets stemming from uncertainty about how broad and rapid the recovery from the pandemic will be, it seems likely that this upsurge in options trading, which has focused primarily on, you know, star tech stocks like Tesla and Apple, will help fuel even greater market volatility.
Just ahead, the airlines face tough times, but they're also making moves to expanding their reach. We'll look at why that's happening during the pandemic. The airline industry faces an even murkier future in a few days when U.S. pandemic assistance is set to run out. Despite this ongoing struggle, some of the big carriers are actually launching major new routes. For a checkup on where things stand for aviation, we're joined by Heard on the Street columnist John Sandreo. John, it's good to talk to you.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm doing well, John. So on this topic of airline expansion, we're seeing United add flights to India, Africa, and Hawaii. JetBlue is adding new routes across the country. It seems so odd in the midst of a pandemic. Is this a survival tactic or something more?
It is partially a network management sort of, you know, waking up every month and kind of thinking, how much of our previous expansion plans can we keep doing? Which of them should we put on hold? And, you know, depending on each airline's relative strengths, because, you know, what happens in a crisis is always you retrench to what you feel is your core strategy. We are seeing one thing or another. So in a way, I would say it is a survival strategy, but also part of this longer term strategic strengths and weaknesses that they're trying to balance.
And John, in the U.S. right now, time is running out for airlines when it comes to government assistance. The future is not clear. We have seen staff reductions. We have seen some capacity reductions. Talking to your sources, what else is taking place perhaps behind the scenes to ensure survivability?
Of particular importance is the fact that, you know, even though leisure travel has returned somewhat, business travelers have not. And let's remember that for legacy airlines, like that's where the money is, right? Like, when you and I travel in economy for, you know, a long haul flight, we're basically filling the plane, right? Like the money comes from like the corporate Amexes and you know, the premium cabin. So this is part of the worry of the airline industry, which is like, how do we, it's not just about, you know, bringing in revenue, it's also about how do we keep making money. But the other worry, which I think could be sort of a rough wake up, you know, after October, is that if you see how capacity has changed depending on the size of the airport, you will see that the CARES Act has basically protected very small regional airports. All of these routes, you know, if they're cut to try and save money, they're more difficult to bring back because, you know, it's like all these kind of, you know, little, you know, connections that go to small cities. And, you know, once you've gotten rid of them, it's hard to know how many of them will come back.
John, as you know, many of our listeners are in the United States, but they also travel around the world. This is a global issue, a global transportation issue. From your spot in London, globally speaking, what does the future hold for some of the international carriers?
It's very hard to see, you know, without a vaccine and a recovery in corporate travel, which is still to be seen how much we will go back to previous levels. There are some analysts that say that because we've gotten so comfortable with Zoom, you'll see a 15% permanent reduction in you know, those business travel revenues. The reason why we are unlikely, for example, in Europe to see huge changes, even though it is a critical moment for the airline industry, is that a lot of governments have rescued these airlines. We've seen that, you know, particularly with Lufthansa in Germany. But we've also seen it with, for example, Air France. So it is still to be seen what the world will look like in a world where all these companies are sort of kept alive and they have to figure out a way to make money again without business travel. But at the same time, they have to be smaller. So I think it's a very uncertain time, and even more so, you know, in a less mature market like Europe compared to the US.
And finally, as far as ticket prices are concerned, are we going to see some major hikes because of this financial instability, or is that something the airlines are going to want to remain competitive with?
The airline industry has always been a cutthroat, very competitive industry where, you know, the companies make very thin margins. And I don't think that has changed at all. And I think this will continue to be the case. I think weakness in demand and, you know, the uncertainty that consumers face has changed a lot of things in how, you know, we purchase tickets. Like we know, for example, people are buying a lot more in the last week, the last 2 weeks. All of these things shift the power, the balance of power to consumers, right? And I think this is going to continue, even if airlines try to be a bit more rational and, you know, they try to keep, you know, a bit of a grip on supply. I really don't think they will manage to, you know, push yields up significantly while the environment is so uncertain, even if people fly, right? Because we've seen people are willing to fly under the right conditions, but I really don't think they can just squeeze the same amount of margin out of tickets that they were doing before.
John Cendreo joining us from London. John, thanks for stopping by.
Pleasure.
Let's face it, this is a really tough time. There are challenges for those of us who can't work from home and challenges for those who can. The pressure to balance work and family is even tougher in these times, and it can take a toll on our mental health. Surveys show major increases in people feeling anxiety or depression. Our Work and Life columnist Rachel Feinzig looks at the tough question of how to talk about mental health with your boss. Among the expert advice, consider the company culture. Think carefully about whether your manager is the best person to go to. When in doubt, keep it vague, but don't lie. For more advice on how to handle these struggles on the job, Rachel's full column is on WSJ.com. And that's what's news for Monday. We're back tonight with an updated episode. If you like our show, please rate and review us wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Mark Stewart with The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.